The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
This is not a program dedicated exclusively to either war populations or the followers of the post or the folks that are really self-initiated as authors, but it will encompass both. And Terry is extremely knowledgeable on the dynamics of the New York market and will have a lot of content for you, but also wants to reserve time to discuss the situation of the issues we said before. Wants to reserve time afterwards for questions, for particular questions, and that will help drive the program as well. But in macro, you know, we're going to be looking at strategies for identifying the legal practice areas up in New York, strategies for identifying legal employers, as well as summer and permanent legal job opportunities. And then, as important, we have a professional need to present your candidacy to the New York job market, particularly in light of interviews. And the New York job market, as you'll come to learn, is rather unique. A lot of the generalities that dovetail with other job markets, but there are very specific practices up there, and it's very important that you educate and present yourself as an educated candidate. Otherwise, we'll see right through your job search and how to be able to handle the need, and Terry will help us navigate those kinds of issues. And before I turn it over to Terry, she is really going to drive the program. I just wanted to say, for those of you, just a little more about fall recruitment, to the extent you're a 2L and you're seeing it for the first time, experiencing it for the first time, you're in it or you're not in it. Perspective, folks. Fall recruitment is not the end all for how 2L students get their job. Might seem like it's this time of year, everyone's running around in suits, OCPD's got a lot of stuff going on. Sure, it's very visible, but it's not the end all. It's a very legitimate and strong way for people get jobs, second and third year students. Typically, about a quarter of our students get jobs through the fall recruitment process. But a third get them through the self-initiated and OCPD assisted job search. So, and in addition, 70% from job postings and 50% from referrals. So, fall recruitment, the process, your recruiting program, our regional programs are very important, but they're not the only way folks people get jobs. So, if you're in the process, or if you feel like you're not being competitive in the process, don't start feeling alienated. Come down and stop, and you have lots of programs throughout the years, a year about other careers, about careers in the federal government, about how to get jobs with large firms outside of OCI, etc. Okay, so just a little perspective for you there. I want you to really buy into this process and know that we're there to serve the entire population, from the private mega firm, the small public interest organization, everything in between. Okay? Great. So without further ado, I'm the Emmy podcast system on the way to Terry.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I love how everybody knows who Kristen is. I'm not calling on anybody. Okay. Let me just start with a little background on myself. I graduated from law school. I figured out last night when I was preparing more than 10 years ago. It was kind of freaking me out. In 96, I graduated from Emory, law school in Atlanta, Georgia. I went to practice for a law firm in Texas with about 450 lawyers. And in 2000, I joined a company called BCG Attorney Services. The company, in its infancy at that time, had an office that had just expanded past the CEO's garage in Los Angeles. And I started the New York office, and I've been there ever since. We're a company now with offices in, I think, 12 cities now, something like that. We've got loads of recruiters and we work all over the country. I'm very New York-centric. Our offices are in Times Square, out of the New York office. We handle Manhattan outside of New York, or outside of Manhattan, New York, New Jersey, a little bit of Philadelphia. We handle the overseas market. Overwhelming majority of what I do is New York. I'd like to get a sense from you guys. How many here are actually from New York? And you guys, is it either a city or Long Island or suburb and then school in New York City? Of everybody here, how many people are 100% sure they want to go to New York? And so the rest of you are sort of considering New York and other cities. Good. Let's talk a little bit about the New York market. I was having dinner 2 nights ago with a candidate that I placed, and he had been working at that gentleman in the city, and I placed him at a firm in New York. And I mentioned that I was coming down here to talk to you guys. And he said, you know, gosh, there's just no way to explain it. It's just completely different from anywhere else you might want to practice. And I appreciate that New York just might sound like a little bit snotty and obnoxious, like, let's come and check this out. But it is very different. Not necessarily better, but it's extremely different. I love New York more than anything, but I'm really not here to sell you guys what you've been to New York. I'm here to help you go there if that's what you want. It's not the thing for everybody. I have just 3 words up here that are going to guide my comments. Sophistication, strategy, and presentation. The first thing we're going to talk about before we talk about a cover letter or a contact or anything is sophistication. I think it's so important to understand what you're getting into in the New York market, both in a professional sense and sort of a cultural city sense. Let's talk about sort of the pros of the New York market. New York has a reputation of having the absolute best training for a young associate. It is the most sophisticated work you can get. If there's a deal that's on the cover of the Wall Street Journal, a New York firm is handling it. Young New York associates have a hand in it. People like it because it's a difficult, fast-paced, intellectually rigorous environment. It's all cutting-edge stuff. All of the interesting sort of new financial products that I'm not even sophisticated enough to explain to you. All of that's coming out of the investment bank in New York. If you like creativity, if you like being on top of those kind of markets, New York is a good day. Maybe more importantly for some of you, New York is widely regarded as that. So not only is it the most sophisticated, but everybody outside of New York sees it as such. So if you go to New York for a couple years, you're highly marketable to go to another city. Doesn't always happen in New York. You want to go to New York, New Jersey, great. New Jersey, New York, not so much. Compensation, top of the line. I don't know how sort of in tune you guys are with compensation figures, but now the best firms are paying first year is 125, which is kind of high. The cultural and financial center of the world. As I said, all the banks are there. Everything big in the financial market happening in New York. Obviously, there are a lot of cultural elements. I noticed that a lot of my lawyer friends, myself included, everybody who's a lawyer in New York seems to be like, oh, I'm a frustrated writer, dancer, musician, painter, photographer. It really appeals to people who have sort of that frustrated whatever it is I didn't do. Diverse community. You may or may not care about that, but for people who like being in a diverse community, absolutely the place to be. You're the kind of person who just likes to be on their feet. You want to change food at 2 o'clock in the morning. You will get a viewer. You like the freedom of not having a car. You get that in the book. You know, it's a very sort of free, liberating environment. You can sort of run all over the place at any time of day or night. Here are the bad things about New York. And it's all the flip side of what I just talked about. There's not a lot of hand-holding. So you go into certain firms, certain firms are better mentors than other firms. But New York is compared to other environments. It's still a lot of throw you into school and leave you to that. You've got to be a very independent-minded associate to do well. The lifestyle can be really intense. Associates are working a lot of hours. Not really one of those places where you can get in at like 7:30 and clear up your desk and leave by 6. Everybody there rolls in late. And they stay as long as they need to get everything done. Sometimes that's all night. Everybody has a black bear. Everybody's always plugged in. And there's really a work-life balance in New York. It's just a different kind of balance than what you might see in other cities. We talked about compensation. The flip side of compensation is that while you get paid a lot of money there, it's going to be more expensive than other cities. It's a lot more expensive. It's not really a differential of like two or three. I did some research. The average price of a home in New York in terms of price per square foot is 4 times higher than the average in the U.S. So, you know, $145,000 is a lot of money, but it's not 4 times more than what other people are making. So you have to be prepared for the expense. Everybody I know that lives there and loves it, don't worry about it. I just pay more out of my paycheck for living expenses than other people do. But you need to be prepared for that. Other con, New York is tough to get into. I mean, that's probably why it's better here. There's a lot of focus on grades. All of this stuff can be really tough. So it's a difficult market to penetrate. Opportunities for long-term success may be more difficult. So, you know, get the great job at a great firm with a partnership of $2 million a year. That's going to be a great partnership. And we can stop that. And these all may be things you've thought about. But here's the point I want to make, and I want you guys to think through this stuff. Even though all of this seems very, very far away for you guys, even if it's 10 years, maybe a partner, even if it's 15 years buying a house, those things are significant. And the more sophisticated you are about the market, it's all going to lead into everything else. First of all, if you're sophisticated about what it means to go into New York, you're going to make the right choice about whether you're trying to get into that market. And if you understand what you're doing, you're going to present so much better. You're going to do better if you know what this whole New York market is about. When I was a law student, many years ago, I went into law school. I was very concerned about this. I was like, very nerdy and studied, and I did not think at all about where I wanted to live, what city I wanted to live in, firms, what an associate's life is like. I felt like I had enough on my plate. I went to a lot of interviews, Dallas, D.C., Atlanta, New York, and kind of like, oh, I don't know, that sounds good. All right, Dallas sounds okay. You can have it. And, you know, I wasn't a horrible law student. I was not sophisticated about what I was doing. As a result, I didn't do very well in the interview process. I mean, ultimately, I got something to say, but, you know, the feedback was just like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She doesn't thought about these extremely important things, like, where do I want to live when I start law? So I really encourage you to take time from all of your other responsibilities and think through these things, if for no other reason than it's going to set you apart from everybody else who's interested. Let's talk a little bit about the business of law firms in New York. You need to be sophisticated about it. Understand how law firms work in New York, where their business comes from. Corporate. All about corporate work. Doesn't mean you have to go into corporate work. Just understand that so many of these law firms are built on their relationships with banks, big corporations, what have you. I mean, all of the stuff focuses on this is where the money's coming from, these are the big clients. Understand the subtlety of the practice area. It's important, I think, for the law students to differentiate yourself by instead of walking into a firm and saying, oh, you guys are an LLC or a corporate work. That's great. Corporate is a huge and meaningless umbrella firm in New York. You know, learn a little bit about it. Are they Cadwalder and they're really known for mortgage-backed securitization? Technically, that's corporate work, but that's where all their money's coming from. Learn a little bit about how that's different than investment management. Gavin's really busy with hedge funds right now. Learn about hedge funds. There's tons of money being made, but that's where all the law firms are going. Lots of opportunities for associates there. We have passed out, I think, the guided practice area. We've talked at a lot of law schools, and I find that law students don't really understand how what they're studying in school links up with practice areas. And that's okay. It's not your job to do that at this point, but it's going to help you. the guy that he did company-wise. I will tell you that if you go into New York, sections on finance and corporate, don't even scratch the surface. So spend a lot of time as you're approaching specific firms, understanding, and you have to let them know the internet, you've got tons of information to go out and find this stuff. Find out about what all these different practice areas are, and make it specific to firms. I'm going to give you an example. When I was practicing, I interviewed law students all the time, talked to lawyers every day. People call me, they say, Carrie, we moved to New York. I need you to help me, and they're selling themselves to me. And here's what I hear. I don't want to be a corporate lawyer. I don't want to be an international lawyer. Okay, well, what are you talking about? That really doesn't give me anything. So think about how that appears to a law firm. Law firms doing business, they want somebody who's interested in what they do. I want to be an international lawyer. Okay. Nobody knows what that means. Think about practice areas and think about being able to define for them. You know, hey, I was reading the Crane Journal the other day, and I think you guys are doing this warehouse sterilization stuff. Fascinating. Tell me about that. Tell me that it makes all the difference when you're talking to a New York firm. What's marketable in New York? This is going to be relevant to you guys if, you know, let's say you're doing a summer associate or some kind of job in the summer that's not in New York, but you ultimately want to be in New York. Obviously, everything corporate, finance-related, commercial litigation, tax, intellectual property. If you are positioning yourself to go into the New York market, stay away from things that are very DC, specific. I mean, think about what's going to play in New York versus DC. You have one energy job in New York, 37 corporate offices. So energy is not going to be particularly notable. I know a lot of people get jobs on the hill and stuff like that. Yeah, not so much in New York. Highly regulatory jobs, like the trade jobs, for example, anything that's really sensitive in the city, you're going to have a tough time. Do a lot of research, though. I mean, there are some areas where partners at law firms in New York are telling me, we've got somebody who's got some experience, gangbusters. Hedge funds, security litigation is going crazy. I'm not a huge Wall Street Journal reader that much, but read it every day for a month. And so you get into that stuff as you're approaching firms, that can help. Okay, let's talk strategy. For summer opportunities. So we're mostly 2Ls in here, is that right? Okay. On campus interviewing, how many of you guys are interviewing with your firms on campus right now? That's really good. I mean, that's the easiest way to get into New York firms, either as a summer associate. You can make direct submissions. When I got my job at law school, I applied to the firms directly. They were not interviewing at Emory, and I just reached out and said, hey, what do you guys think? That information is really out there. I mean, it was more work for you guys than probably flipping your resume more than spots out there. But all that information is available. If we work with,
I just want to ask about that because some people kind of say like, oh, if they're not going to look at it, they're looking, what is this? It's not coming for anybody. Like, do firms actually like those commissions?
Well, I mean, I think if you want to approach a firm that's interviewing on campus, first what you're on campus. They'll see everybody
they're
able to see from the
parents
while they're here.
Yeah, absolutely. They're participating. Definitely. I wouldn't stop the analysis there. And if you're successful, then they're following the intention later on. But in fact, yes, that's what.
Yeah. And so we work with like 450 law firms in New York as a recruiter. We didn't even scratch the surface. At one point, I tried to figure out how many law firms there were of any substantial size, and I literally at 1,100 together. So there are so many firms out there. They may not be hiring for summer associates. They may not think about hiring a summer associate until they get your cover letter and resume. It's a lot of work. You're not going to get an interview for everything you send out, but do it. A lot of people get jobs that way.
We could help you strategize in that campaign. Put in the front of the office, and that's what can help you.
Yeah, absolutely. The other opportunity is to choose something local for the summer. That's going to translate back up to New York after you graduate for a full-time position. So there's a firm that has a New York office. You don't have an opportunity in New York, take it and take it. Doesn't necessarily mean a firm can give you an offer to impress them where you want. But a good way to get there. Again, one of the things I want to caution you though is, you know, it's great if you want to go to Coleman Lardner in D.C. They have a New York office. But they don't have a corporate practice, for instance. So think about what practice areas you're going to do too. So you're not doing something where you say, oh, let me see if I can get transferred to the New York office only to learn that there's no work to do like that. So you want to think about those things. Even if it's a firm that doesn't have a New York office, if they're well known, if they've got a good name, so that can be a very marketable way to make yourself a New York. There are internships that I think are valuable, but again, tie this all together. Read the practice area guide, think about New York, read the papers there, understand what's driving the business of New York law firms, and think about what internships you could be getting, what summer positions you could be getting. Third is relevant. Position at the SEC, fantastic. You know, AUSAs are often remarkable for people who are interning in that office. Again, going to Capitol Hill, probably not so relevant. Public interest, I hate those just public interest. Probably not that relevant to the New York firm. Something that's highly regulatory, FERC, something very energy related, again, not going to be relevant. So if you're thinking through what skills am I going to get, you even if you go work for a bank or something, what skills am I going to get here and if I can translate to a firm, and they can be attracted to a firm, then go for that.
Sure, I can ask you a question at that point. Advice for those who can get an associate position in New York, but determined to get up there, would it be worth looking at a financial, one of the financial services or investment houses if one has a sophisticated business background? If you're non-legal but business related, and that plans for later on to prevent.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic. I perceive that those are pretty competitive.
Yeah.
And go into a lot of MBA type.
Sure.
But especially if you've got a business background, absolutely. Very, very high value. The one thing I will say is the summer abroad programs, I don't know if any of you guys do those or look at those, typically not very interesting for New York firms. In the amount of time I've been doing recruiting and the hundreds of partners that I've met with about what they look for, I've had respectfully one. That you like to do something to do going abroad in the summer. So probably not something to focus on. Summer positions. I won't stress me out, but here's the deal with summer positions. You know, a lot of firms is kind of like a you're off the loon kind of thing, or lots of social stuff, get assignments, whether you're working with a firm in New York or anywhere, take it seriously. You know, if a firm hires 40 summer associates and they hire 39 permanent, you need to only do that one. Because it's gonna, you know, it's gonna carry you. I was surprised to have on occasion a candidate of mine who didn't get a summer offer, and I always care. What we see is work product is important, but often it's sort of bad judgment issues. I don't want to derail this conversation about summer, but can't tell you how many people have come, stupid, you know, say drop an F-bomb at the basketball game with partners and don't get an offer. So very important strategy getting into New York. So through that little brief opportunity you have for some type of students. Now full-time positions. So thinking about what you're doing in your third year, you still have on campus for third year, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So obviously take advantage of that. Again, I would, you know, with as much emphasis as I told you to apply to firms directly for summer programs, really do it for full-time positions. Because with all of those firms we talked about in New York, a certain percentage of them would consider a summer associate, a much greater percentage would consider a permanent hire. So, you know, really be smart about who you target and target everybody to fit what your criteria is.
You've got
a
better
chance
of finding
good
stuff
in those 3Ls, not
about New York and then as well.
I don't know. I don't know if I can make that generalization, but if you take, you know, if you just look at, if I just hit 200 firms to apply to, you know, the chances of somebody looking for somebody permanent, as people are applying to them, and somebody's looking for someone that is, not everybody can come to them. Everybody hires for it.
So then, yeah, I was sort of picked up on that comment as well. So that would probably include all of the firms in New York, not just the large firms that tend to hire predominantly from their summer class, therefore have that need to be out too well. So you have to look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I don't want to be silly about this. It's kind of like data. I mean, you know, sometimes you just have to be reaching out to enough people and they look at your stuff and go, oh my gosh, I didn't think I was looking, but now I'm looking. This is fantastic. I can't tell you how many people got positions like that. I mean, my husband got his job because he was just sending out letters, and the guy was like, well, I never read these, but he just got a big case in, so he's and, you know, it could be just a matter of being tenacious enough to get the time in front of it.
I think it's more important to be, for example, if you don't get the summer associate position at a big firm in New York, to work for a small firm in New York where you're probably not going to be asked on after the people if they don't do that, or to work for a bigger firm in D.C. and then try to make the move after.
I work for a bigger firm. The other opportunity, this is going to be fairly limited, especially for tax folks. Going to NYU and getting your LLM in taxation, great way to get into New York. Probably one of the only ways that you can virtually guarantee it. So if you're into the tax world, there are other LLM programs. I've seen somebody recently who did an LLM in labor and employment. She got a great job with a big firm for that. I think that's a little sketchier, but just something to consider. Federal clerkship, anywhere. In a federal clerkship, probably going to be marketable in New York. It really doesn't need to be New York. There are certain government positions that are highly marketable in New York, Department of Justice, DOJ, AUSA, I think I mentioned, FTC, I think I mentioned. Again, just focus on what you're doing. If you go to the DOJ, you're doing antitrust, for example, you're going to do extremely well going into a firm in New York. But not everything you would be doing necessarily would be a thing that makes sense in New York. Again, we're going back to our practice areas. We're going back to understanding what the New York law firm is doing. State positions in government make it more difficult to transfer back into a law firm in New York. There are a couple that I'll just mention briefly that are okay. Office of Corporation Counsel and the Manhattan DA's office. People. It's sort of an unspoken rule, you do like 3 years and people can still get much private practice. The strategy that in New York law. Can't tell you how many people come to me and say I want to be in New York, but they're not licensed. And too often I think the attitude is like, well, if they want me to set the bar, after they give me a job, I'll set the bar. It is kind of the base that licensure requirements for the state, so, you know, get through that, and that's going to make you a lot more comfortable in the future. One cautionary thing on full-time strategies, and it kind of links back to your question about, you know, the better DC, the bigger firm, contract positions can be really tough.
some people come in and do contract work, and have to know what that is, but, you know, basically you're working with contractors, they're paying you by the hour, you're doing a lot of documents and things like that. Look for associate positions. I would much rather have you guys in an associate position at a small firm, making less money than doing contract work, making more money. Sometimes that can be really hard. Okay, now here's the fun part. Getting a job, New York's tough. It's pretty, the bar's pretty high to get in there. But I'm going to give you guys some really, really, really good tips that are going to set you aside from the myriad of other law firms coming to New York. It's all about presentation. What you're going to hear me talk a lot about is things not to do. I promise I will tell you some things to do, but you know, think about things not to do. 90% of it is not screwing up, and then the other 10% is really well. So you really need to pay attention to the 90%. Let me sort of put this in context for you. What I do pretty much all day is read resumes. So I'm looking at these people who are saying, oh, Gary, you know, getting into New York. I'm looking at cover letters, I'm looking at resumes, and I'm basically interviewing people by phone. So I'm going to tell you things that drive me crazy, and also drive law firms crazy. I'm basically sitting in law firm shoes when it's not a board, when I look at these things. And one thing I want you to think about is what drives law firms crazy is their reviewing candidates are distractions. So if you're looking at a resume and you see typos, all of a sudden you're thinking about typos. You're like, I can't believe I got a resume with typos on. Typos, who puts typos in the resume? And then you're not thinking about the candidate. So all of these don't do's I'm going to tell you about, just eliminating distractions. So all persons that's reviewing your resume, your cover letter is doing, is thinking about you and putting you in that firm and not thinking about all these terrible things you have to tell you about. Here's what's going to be really important, especially for you guys who are not from New York, who are interested in New York, on your cover letter or whatever your initial presentation is to a firm. Do not, this is true for anybody actually, but I'm interested in your firm in New York because I have opened to all geographic regions. I see it constantly. All that says to me is you really don't appreciate any differences in geographic regions. Kind of all the same to you. It says to a firm that you're an unlikely long-term candidate. You don't really care whether you're in New York or Miami or Los Angeles. Next year, maybe in Nashville or San Francisco. It also indicates to firms that you may not likely accept a job if offered. And so does it sound? Law firms actually really care about that. They really only want to extend offers to people they think are likely to accept. What New York firms in particular are trying to avoid, and I hear this all the time, it's sort of like, well, I want to go to New York because it seems really fun. You know, there's tons of stuff to do there, and I just think it would be a great place to be for 4 years. I actually believe all that's true. And if you'd like to come to New York for a couple of years, it's really fun, that's fine. But don't tell a law firm. You know, when they hire you to intern for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, they really don't want to sort of farm this on vacation in a big city. So those are all the bad things. What do you think is bad? You know, you think about the things that we talked about, all the pros about New York, and you put in concisely what's applicable to you. I'm from New York. I did my undergraduate at Baxter. I have a sister who practices at SCAD, and I've spent a lot of time with her. So I've really gotten to know New York. Show them that you have a connection to New York, that you have thoughtful reasons for going there. If it's practice specific, you know, that's fantastic. Hey, I have an electrical engineering undergraduate degree, and I know that intellectual property litigation and all these diseases are all going down to New York. I absolutely have to do that. All of those things, I mean, obviously it's going to be specific to you. But if you can put those in there affirmatively, quickly and in a way that's going to tell the story. It's going to be a much more compelling case. Don't think you see on cover letters. I get a lot of sort of, if I could tell you that I'm an associate who would be at work the morning my first child was born, is that something that would interest you? You know, no. Nobody looks it up. You know, it's important to be straightforward. If you're going into New York, everybody's going to assume that somebody who likes to work hard, that you're dedicated, that you're going to be there when they need you. You don't have to be confused with that notion or be confused with it. Everything you say in the cover letter should add value. I hate that term, add value, but it's in the email. You know, just people are busy, they don't have a lot of time, it doesn't have to be super brief, but just really get to the point. If you are looking for a tax position and you're too high grade or tax, you know, I'm looking for a tax associate position with your law firm. I'm attaching my transcript. If you'll notice, I got A's in these two tax courses. But whatever show it, you might have noticed that before I went to law school, I work for the Department of Labor. That's why I'm interested in labor and women's jobs. Whatever it is, link to your background or your interest to their firm. Say it. Say you want an interview. You're off. Resumes are the same thing. Actually, I should have brought this and I didn't. If anybody wants to email me, I did an article on what not to put in resumes. And I think a lot of people put a lot of filler in resumes. We see a lot of people who like to read or travel. Okay? Everybody loves to read and travel. You know, put your education stuff in there, put your experience in there, so that you don't have to fill out white space on the resume. Okay? Don't put that your position is, you know, the internet or we're perfect or whatever. All of that stuff is, I mean, I see a ton of resumes, like 80%, 90%. If it's not relevant, you don't need to be putting it forward. When you get to the interview stage, this is really important. You're only going to hear it. Get a firm interested in having an interview with you. Go. Just go. Don't call them and be like, well, what do you guys pay for? And can you put me up in a hotel? And I'm going to be there in 2 months for my cousin's wedding, so maybe you can do something then. Just go. I know that sometimes you're on a law student budget, it's tough. Most firms are going to reimburse you for this stuff anyway, so it's not a big deal. But when the relationship with the firm starts off with a lot of hemming and hawing about travel expenses and how I get to the firm and all that stuff, it's a really bad first impression. I've got firms. Yeah, if you're interested in New York, show that you can get up there quickly and equally and not make a big deal. You know, if you send a cover letter that says, I'm really interested in New York, I'm absolutely dedicated to getting up there, and then you're like, well, it's hard to get up there. It's expensive to get up there. Then, you know, you're sort of just backpedaling. Alright. Here's the big difference between law students and lawyers who are interviewing. Law students obviously have the disadvantage of having a practice. They don't know what practice is like. It's hard to ask sort of relevant questions. But here's what law students do best. They don't ask enough questions. And they ask the wrong kinds of questions. I can't tell you how many law students I've talked to who have said, what can I tell you about my firm? And they go, well, I read the web page, and I talked to the other guy, so I think I'm good. Never, ever do that. Promise me, everybody, right now, by raising your hand, you will never, ever say, I don't have any questions. It's like marriage. You know, people always, always, always have questions. There's always something out there. Get deep and informed with your questions. Don't, you know, what are your pro bono policies? How much vacation time? How much do you have to pay? No. You know, what direction is the firm taking? How do you see your practice area grow? Are there any new practice areas that you guys are looking into? Really easy question when you're nervous. Ask the person who's interviewing you, how did you get to this firm? Tell me about your background. I'd love to hear a little bit about it. And it's also a great question. She'll find out about why people made decisions that they did in terms of the firm. But never, ever, ever run out of questions. Well, the best thing you can do to prepare for an interview is just think about what you might ask. You're going to learn a ton, and it's really, really going to set you apart. The person just goes, part of that is reading, preparation, firm, read everything you can. Internet's great, love it. Find articles written by the people that are interviewing you. Yes.
Just a quick question. Usually, like, you're on campus interviews or like job fairs and such, where there's a very narrow length of time, and then you can talk about, you're asked questions to you, but maybe a minute left, a person talks before something. You really haven't had a chance to ask questions. What's the best solution there?
Well, that's okay. I mean, I would never suggest to you that you sort of stop and say, I now have 10 minutes of questions, so we're going to mess up the whole day together. You know, you have to adapt to your interviewer. So if you've got, you know, Joe fire off questions, answer his questions. But you always have opportunities in an interview. You know, if the guy says, well, you know, what do you wish this to do when you graduate? Well, you know, I'm really interested in litigation, and in particular, I'm really interested in this franchise litigation at your firm. So can you tell me a little bit about that? You know, and that's actually my next point, which is make that conversation. Interviews don't need to be question, answer. Sometimes they are, and that's okay. But you always have an opportunity to use your questions there. If you ask good questions, you'll be very impressed with you.
Isn't there a great question to ask right at the end of the interview if you have any more questions? At what point do you stop having questions so that the interview ends?
Never let me leave. You know, I mean, my style would really probably be to say, you know, listen, I think the firm is great. I have tons of questions. I know you have to know them. So if you could, you know, just do a little finishing question. And acknowledge the fact that you don't acknowledge the fact that you wouldn't need to ask questions, but you want to never just understand.
How would the depth of your questions change if you're on a second interview or a combat versus just one interview on campus?
That's a great question. That's a really good question. You know, there's a thing in litigation called looping. When you're asking somebody questions, it's the way to ask a leading question. Oh, you said that you were, you know, at that restaurant at 8 o'clock last night. So what did you eat? You know, you're always looping the information that you've heard before and looping again. So you can always do that. I think, you know, it's interesting because I met with Sally when she came on campus, and she was telling me a little bit about this. I was wondering, you know, is that something that you hear back? So we'll do that as well.
Okay, to that, looping more as a technique, but as a very good way to converse both personally and in an interview, shows that you're an active listener. You're understood, paying attention to what the person is saying, taking an interest in it, and using that as the impetus for the next question.
Let me tell you one other thing, and it's a pet peeve. Again, these are all good tips for wherever you go, but New York folks in particular are great people. I've heard a lot of this, and it disappoints me, but it happens. A lot of partners are interviewing young associates who have a little bit of this in their voice, but I think it's kind of a current to today's life, or, you know, but it's, oh, well, I went to college in New York, and oh, I think I'd be interested in corporate law, and think about those things. I mean, really think about how you present yourself in terms of being articulate. I just want you to write these four words down. This is the 10% that you need to do. Here's what law firms want to see in an interview. They want to see energy. They want to see intellect. They want to see interest in their firm, and they want to see personality. If you can take out all the distractions that I talked about, the typos and the pitching moves about travel expenses and the pro bono questions, take out all the distractions and you can show those four things, you're in good shape. That's about my time for the regular presentation, but I just want to answer the questions. I'm going to be here as long as you guys want. So let's do like a general Q&A, and then if anybody has individual questions.
If you're interviewing with multiple offices of a different firm for their final round, then mention that, or I don't really know how the interaction is between offices. Are they competing with each other? Are they competing with each other, or can you talk a little bit about that?
That's a good question. Actually, my colleague in the DCF, the stand-in secretary, we deal with that all the time as well. You have to be careful, because typically they are coordinating that, or, you know, they could be coordinating. So you don't want to go into a New York firm where you're interviewing both New York CDC and say, I'm only interviewing in New York, or I only care about New York. So I think, you know, honesty might be the best one. And just let them know. Not that you have to make things think about it, but I think a lot of, tell me if you agree with this, a lot of law firms have the ability to coordinate, and then some are associated, some are interested in coordinate. You know, often they get classes together. So I think there's enough risk that they're all going to be talking about how to, you know, you want to be clear about it.
I would say absolutely. That's just a matter of fact. If you're interviewing with the Chicago office, New York office, you better understand that there's a 99% chance that they know that. So it might be in a matter of proactively disengaging that issue when you go in there. They might not bring up anything, but I think it might not, that might be who you to broach that. You might know, perhaps not, that I'm also in the Chicago office, and I just want to put that in context. My first choice is deal with the calling on Chicago. I found Chicago, and that's because I'm also in the effort. Very much so. I would actually do that proactively.
Question. When we go to the interview, I was instructed to bring like a writing sample, maybe an updated resume, transcript, references. What is the best way to present those to the employer? Should it be in a folder? Should it be paperclip? I mean, what most professional way that you would suggest that information?
I don't think there's a standard. I mean, if you ask 20 people, there's 20 different answers.
Is there too much of a, I know that's a funny question, is there like a way where you go from this to point? Almost like something desperate.
$20. Like a scented resume or something?
Yeah.
That's probably right. You know, again, being concise is the information you're delivering to a firm at this point. You know, tell them what's relevant, tell them what you want to know, but I don't believe there are points for, you know, heaviness of material. And what you don't want to do is, here's my resume, 10 minutes later, here's my transcript, here's that, you know, have something to put in my package, so you want it, you know, great. So yeah, I don't think there's anything other than what you're telling people to do in the package, but it's fine, just have that all moved together, and then you can send it around. Dan?
I've heard that litigators in New York are pretty tough and aggressive. What are your thoughts in terms of interviewing with litigators in New York in terms of not coming across as being too weak for the New York practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are generally speaking. You know, the comment I hear from litigation partners is of the things that we talked about, the personality and energy, intellect is very important. So one of the things to do, I don't think you ever want to be somebody you're not. I don't think you want to go in and be like, you know, Wall Street guy, hair back, that's not you. But one of the things you can do, and what litigators in New York really like, is take something that shows that you're really into, like, chewy big issues. So, you know, it's one thing to be like, oh, it's just this really cool course on advanceable procedure. And I go, oh, sorry. We took this course, and then we read this case that actually came out in New York, and it was discussing, you know, who's going to have jurisdiction for this matter, the state court or federal court. What I thought was interesting was the way that they resolved it. You know, if you can actually sort of a show versus tell kind of thing, I think that's better than trying to take on any particular persona that the partner might have. Yeah.
Would it be valuable to start talking about a case that they've worked on? Because, you know, like I've looked at their bio and talked about a case, but I kind of sometimes think in the back of my head, or this isn't really telling me anything about the firm, and I know my question isn't really directed about my interest in the firm.
Yeah, absolutely. People love talking about stuff. And talking about a case that they work on is great. And you don't have to say, you know, tell me about that case you work on. You can say, you know, how is that team set up that you work on that case? You know, how do you guys staff something? Ask a question that's also great for me to
what associates what people might do sometimes well.
Two quick questions.
Sure.
Reading all that I've asked about pro bono in an interview, I feel like that's something that comes in come up in every event of participation on like this. How much does it matter to try to be working at a highly ranked firm versus feel like the top 15 or is that even an issue?
Let me address the pro bono question. I strongly don't think that's a pro bono question. And to be clear, I'm from Moscow, I have the pro bono question literally. Because I just want to help people. So I think it's, you know, for the most part, probably okay as a lawsuit. Again, everybody asks about it. As you said, firms like to use it as a selling point. But, you know, this is kind of about setting yourself apart. So, the two things that give me pause about that is one, if you ask about pro bono, if you talk about pro bono, is it really that different from the conversation you're having with people before you? And two, if you're talking to the one out of 15 or 20 interviewers who in the back of their heads, like, firms need to do pro bono, we're going to make money, you know, we've got corporate clients, and it hits them the wrong way, then that's too much for us, in my opinion. You know what I mean? I don't think people have this, like, crazy, with the desk to the word, we have to press on this question. But I think that it happens enough that, you know, enough people are sort of feeling like, oh, I still 200 hours last month and they're asking me about how I can do work that we don't get paid to. That is enough for us. You know, if they want to talk about it, great. That would be great. Okay, second question. The two parameters you gave me for the top 15 versus top 100, find where you're using tax. Are you technically more marketable from Moscow than from Mayor Brown? Probably, but at that point it doesn't matter of degree than where you're at. So we like people.
If you want a job in New York but you're not necessarily interested in corporate, how do you start a job?
Well, yeah, I want to be clear. When I say it's all about corporate, it doesn't mean you only can do corporate work in New York. Do anything you want. I just want you to have an understanding of the environment.
So you still ask those corporate questions and say, I know that you guys are really strong and you do a lot of work with hedge funds, even if that's something that you're not interested in?
If you want to. I mean, if it's germane to the conversation, you know, you take a firm like Schulte Roth, they've got a great commercial litigation group, all the work's driven by their hedge fund clients. So, you know, if you do enough research, you sort of understand those connections, so it's going to be relevant to ask those kinds of questions. And there are tons of things like that. So often, New York firms, the corporate firms, are driving the clients and driving a lot of the income. So you don't have to go in there and just be like, I read about your corporate group, you know, that corporate person understands what all that means, though. How that affects what their client base is. It may very well affect their other groups. It probably affects their tax groups, certainly. And I think you're just going to come off with much more sophisticated about money.
Okay.
Well, what's the best way to write about those connections with regards to who's driving their litigation department or their clients being close to the firm?
Well, there are lots of ways. What you can do is, the analogs, right, because they have sort of these, I'm sorry, American Winter Ranking. They have sort of these sub-rankings, so it'll be like top 10, you know, hedge fund counsel, top 10 bond lawyers. I think Crane says it too. But, you know, there are a lot of those sort of rankings out there. Chambers says it, Crystal Chambers. You can look at those things to start to get a sense of, you know, sort of what firms are in what space, and that'll help you. And then, you know, it's a lot of work, but I think individually as you are reaching out to a particular firm, understanding what that particular firm does, even if it's not necessarily
the same. I'm also available, Mark Coffey, the office of the AmericanLawyerUnited.com, it's the only real time, it's your law journal, it's a good source of information. Information.com, do you like your information?
Yeah. Yeah. But a lot of those, you know, a lot of those groups have like
biggest corporate deals of the year, biggest mergers of the year. There's tons of law firms love up on the back and rank each other and compete. But there's a lot of that stuff out there. I don't think so for now. If you put a permanent post-graduation position in the government, some of the mergers will not be able to. And again, it's sort of back to that relevance factor. There's something about your skill set, there's something about what you're learning and what you're doing that could be of use to the law firm and the merger.
You
know,
the point you're talking about, the women of the Alamba, and for someone who did go to the owner, that was what I did. How would you change that experience to something that, now I'm all about corporate, I'll go back to my experience. You know, like, how can we transition that? Are you supposed to be able to say, this is related to that business, but here's the, I need to, find this. What did you do? I was taking my company from somewhere. What did I do?
Who was the report for? Who read it? Did you write it for the executive director?
Correct.
Were there any policy changes made as a result of that? Did you analyze any economic conditions?
Yeah, I mean, there are always deals you can talk out of. The supervisor that I work with, that was with the SRA, BNP, has a lot to say. There are things you can pluck out. There is a certain eyebrow raising of somebody who's, resume reads to public interest. I think sometimes I feel like that person is going to work and then they're going to go back to the public in this world. Was this your first year sometimes that you did this?
Yes,
your first and second. I don't know that anybody's going to say that much attention, but I don't think anybody's going to sit there and be like, oh, I don't know how that is. A lot of people have departures from first year someone. Depending on your personality, sometimes there are people who, I've actually placed a lot of people who have left possible work to big firms, did a 1 or 2 year stint in the public position, and then come back into the law firm, which by the way is really hard, but they've done it. And they sort of say, look, this is something I wanted to do. I kind of got it out of my system. Now I'm ready to move on. It was just something I felt like at the time I needed to pursue, and now here I am talking to you. So if you're comfortable talking about it that way, you know, it's best.
There's a lot to do, by the way. We work a lot with those kinds of transitional issues.
Yeah.
I realize that a lot of these services might not be specific and interested in their areas, but they're really just interested also in litigation, like litigation. But I mean, that's litigation is such a big
practice.
Such a huge thing, like corporate. I mean, how would you, someone who really wants to do litigation is interested in so many different areas, and your resume shows that you're interested in so many different areas. You can use that as a strength, but you can't go other litigation interests. But, I mean, how do you put the feeling on that to, I guess the question is, how should you present that and not just sound like I'm interested in corporate?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't worry about that too much. I don't think that you need to. If a law student show such specificity or such specialization in the thing, I think the way to sell that is that, look, here's what I've done. I love securities litigation that I did, and then I did this other plant litigation, which was really cool. But, I'm happiest when I'm used to it. I'm really interested to hear what you guys, I just want to, get my feet wet and go to town. That's a good thing for a that's a good quality to have. You don't necessarily want to be a something that's like, I only want to tell you how. So coming across with somebody who's just ready to sponge everything up is fine, and that's how I sell that. That's what a good one is. And And then also say, and I'm excited to learn about
whatever else you're doing.
I just want to say that's a great question. Very good. So really good question. Leo?
Carol, do you mind sharing your email address with us? As you said,
sure.
Email
me
the request
of an article.
Thank you. And I have cards on the evening now, so if people want to. We have a room until 1:30, so if you have personal questions, or questions, we'll figure out your research on the website. Get back a little bit next week. Bye, Carol. OCPD is doing a program this afternoon on judicial clerkship. Tomorrow, the DOJ honors program. I mean, it's just a bad, folks. There's lots of stuff going on, and if you have interest in New York and beyond, people with their event calendars and avail yourself of the program. Thanks for coming.
Okay.